Back in the days when I was a teenager, before I had status and before I had a pager, you can find the abstract listening to hip hop. My pops used to say it reminded him of bebop. I said, well, daddy, don't you know that things go in cycles? Way that Bobby Brown is just amping like Michael. It's all expected. Things are for the looking. If you got the money, quest is for the booking. Come on,
everybody. Hi, my name is Pablo, and welcome back to another episode of the Back Catalog Podcast with Pablo Dadan. Y'all, thank you so much for all the support on last week's episode about parasocial relationships, which if you haven't checked out, you absolutely positively should. Thank you so much again. I think that was one of my most fun and also informative episodes that I've done so far. But I am even more excited for what we're about to cover this week. As you guys know, it's the last week of the month, so we're doing a complete deep dive on a particular artist. And this week, I decided to talk about hip hop. And there's no better way for me to start out doing a deep dive into some hip hop artists than to start with one of my favorite groups of all time, A Tribe Called Quest. Now, before we get into the complete deep dive of A Tribe Called Quest and their career, please remember that there are links in the description box of this episode that will point you directly to all the songs that I mention in this deep dive on a playlist, both Apple Music and Spotify. Also, if you're not following me, make sure you follow me on Instagram at pablo.thedon. Follow the podcast page, The Back Catalog Pod, catalog spelled the American way, C-A-T-A-L-O-G. Follow me on TikTok, Pablo the Don, all one word. And make sure you follow me over on Twitter, Pablo the Don with two E's. Also, if you would like to, I have a Patreon account. And so you can donate between $3 and $10 a month if you would like to. And it's linked in the description box of this episode as well. So I hope you guys enjoy the episode. Please support our sponsor this week, Manscaped. And yeah, let's talk about some Tribe, man. So for some background on Tribe, Kamal Fareed and Malik Taylor grew up childhood friends in the St. Albans neighborhood of Queens, New York. Fareed was initially a battle rapper who called himself MC Lovechild and would occasionally team up with a school friend, Ali Shaheed Muhammad, as a DJ rapper tag team. Fareed and Shaheed Muhammad began making demos in 1985. Taylor then joined the two, but didn't officially join the group until another neighborhood friend, Jerobe White, joined the crew. They initially called themselves The Crush Connection and later Quest, but in 1988, the group, the Jungle Brothers, who went to high school with Fareed and Taylor, officially coined the group A Tribe Called Quest. It was at this time that Fareed and Taylor also changed their stage names to Q-Tip and Fife Dawg, respectively. Simultaneously, A Tribe Called Quest joined forces with the Jungle Brothers, De La Soul, Queen Latifah, and Moni Love to form the collective The Native Tongues. The collective became known for their Afrocentrism, positivity, and their propensity to sample older music. Tribe then began to shop around a 5-song demo after hiring cool DJ Red Alert as their manager and eventually signed to Jive Records in 1989, who at the time was a prominent independent hip-hop label, but would go on to sign acts like NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, and Britney Spears as the teen pop genre became the dominant sound in the late 90s. The group would then go on to record their first studio album in Calliope Studios, surrounded by their Native Tongues collective. The energy that was captured in those studios is best exemplified around the aura of their first album, which is Fun. Released in April of 1990, People's Instinctive Travels and Paths to Rhythm was unlike most hip-hop at the time. The heavy use of samples is what makes this project stand out amongst others that came out at the time. A Tribe Called Quest would become known for their avid crate digging skills that would go on to inspire sample masters like Kanye West and J Dilla in the future. This project would sample the likes of The Beatles, Stevie Wonder, and Earth, Wind & Fire. Their ability to draw inspiration from the past to create a brand new sound is what makes this project remarkable. Critics love this new witty and fun style of hip hop, but commercially it seemed to receive a mediocre reception. What's funniest about this project is that neither Fife Dawg nor Jerobe are present for most of the album. Q-Tip is known for running a very tight ship in his sessions, and Fife would often miss sessions to hang out with friends, which was against everything Q-Tip wanted in his studio. However, when Fife did show up, it was nothing short of phenomenal performances. The album tackles a wide array of topics, some of which Quest would be known for, like personal aspirations, religion and the sense of community, but also some more unconventional topics like describing the benefits of a vegetarian diet on ham and eggs, or the story of how Q-Tip left his wallet in a diner after seeing an attractive woman in El Segundo, which is also a funny reference to a Sanford and Son recurring joke. This album was a full showing of everything Tribe had to offer, and though it was sort of directionless, the intent of giving us something new was still achieved. The standouts of this album are, of course, the two biggest songs, Can I Kick It and Bonita Applebottom, which I think these songs perfectly encompasses everyone's strengths, Q-Tip's storytelling ability, Fife's wordplay, and funny but poignant lines. This album is a true turning point for hip-hop, but it would be the next album that would solidify the group as cornerstones in the genre. In between People's Instinctive Travels and Album 2, Tribe actually fired their manager and lawyer, which caused tension within the Native Tongues collective. They also joined Russell Simmons, who needs to be held accountable for his multiple assault allegations, rush management. Within the group directly, Fife Dawg was also diagnosed with diabetes, as we would know would be a lifelong battle. The diagnosis almost caused him to leave the group, but he was convinced to stay and contribute more thanks to Q-Tip. Jerovi actually left the group in order to go to culinary school, but not without dropping a handful of verses that didn't even end up making the final cut. The group also toured extensively and produced music videos before hopping back in the studio. The album was recorded at Battery Studios in Manhattan, and what would come of those sessions would be one of the most influential hip-hop albums to ever be released, The Low End Theory. The Low End Theory dropped on September 24th, 1991, which is the same exact day as Nevermind by Nirvana and Blood Sugar Sex Magic by the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Thinking about how historic that day was and how all those projects literally shifted music gives me chills. I often wonder what it was about that day, but that's a topic for a completely different episode. What I love most about The Low End Theory was Tribe's headfirst dive into traditional jazz samples. The album relied heavily on bebop and hard bop jazz, which was big in the 1940s and 50s respectfully, and Q-Tip even references this on the album opener Excursions when discussing the cycles of music as it related to his life and upbringing. The Low End Theory sampled artists like Minnie Riperton, Grover Washington Jr., and The Average White Band, and that was just on the lead single, Check the Rhyme. The album takes a super minimalist approach where the group only focuses on three key elements: vocals, bass, and drums. Tip even went as far to credit NWA Straight Outta Compton for inspiring the production of The Low End Theory. He said the bottom of that track really stuck out to him. At this time, the engineering of the album also stuck out significantly. Before this album, it was apparent to hear old vinyl samples with cracks and pops in them, but engineer Bob Power used multiple techniques to remove those surface noise. I think this album is definitely Fife Dawg's coming out party, though. He was such a stark contrast to Q-Tip with his higher voice, but also his sheer bravado when approaching his verses is just incredible. He shines most on his solo track Butter, but also on songs like Show Business, which is actually one of two tracks that expanded beyond Tribe and added some features from the Native Tongues Collective, the second of which, Scenario, introduced us to leaders of the new school and a young and up-and-coming Busta Rhymes. The Low End Theory kept up the same fun and positivity as People's Instinctive Travels, but Album 2 dug deeper, as well as fed into the name of the album directly. The double entendre of The Low End Theory stood for both the sonic approach of the album, but also the position of Black men in American society. Not only did Tribe take aim directly at the music industry, but also tried to tackle the ever-present issue of consent and what that looks and feels like on the song Infamous Date Rape. There's also a song Tribe was begged to leave off the album called Georgie Porgy, which was basically a sounding off board about how Tribe disliked gay people. I'm really glad that this song got reshaped into what we know as Show Business, because it surely would have left a stain on their legacy for me, but it seems through multiple interviews and their latest music that Tribe has gone on and grown since then. For once, I'd say a record label actually intervened for the right reasons. But as the 30th anniversary of the album just passed, this album set the foundation for a lot of artists while also bridging the gap between multiple generations before them. The Low End Theory is highly regarded for a reason, and it's definitely based in its simplicity. While this album solidified Tribe as the ultimate tastemakers, the next album would bolster their presence and produce their most commercially successful songs to date. Between The Low End Theory and Album 3, Tribe did a lot of touring, and Q-Tip specifically began producing for other artists. Most notably, he contributed on the production of One Love by Nas off his debut album, Illmatic. The issue going into the third album was more so that the sound that Quest had solidified and helped pioneer on The Low End Theory still wasn't the dominant sound in hip-hop. Other members of the Native Tongues dropped bad albums, broke up, and Queen Latifah left rap altogether to star in this little black sitcom that we know as Living Single in 1993. Instead, what dominated the East Coast was the sounds of Illmatic, and what dominated most of rap was now the West Coast-based G-Funk sound. This put a lot of pressure on Tribe, and Fife even said that the pressure was on to drop another album similar to The Low End Theory. And I wouldn't say they did that, I'd actually say they somehow improved on the overall sound that they pioneered there. But we'll discuss that third hour after we hear a word from today's sponsor. Support for the Back Catalog podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in below-the-waist grooming and hygiene. Manscaped offers precision engineering tools for your family jewels. Manscaped just launched their fourth generation trimmer, the Lawnmower 4.0. You heard that right, the 4.0. Join over 2 million people worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code BCP20 at manscaped.com. Can you imagine shaving with a sleek, well-designed, and optimized trimmer that makes shaving time your favorite time in the bathroom? I'm one of the first people who got to try the new 4.0, and I'm absolutely blown away by the performance. The craftsmanship and the details of the 4.0 are legitimately next level. Before trying the 4.0, I was a shaver and then a waxer, and when I was shaving, I accidentally cut myself more than a few times and caused myself to bleed. I hated that so much that I ended up going over to waxing, and we know that waxing can be super expensive. So instead of continuing to cut myself and spending a bunch of money on a wax every couple of weeks, I decided to try Manscaped. And I gotta say, I have not been disappointed, not one bit. Manscaped engineered the ultimate groin and body grip trimmer by focusing on intelligent functionality and an incredibly comfortable grooming experience. Their fourth generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin-safe technology. I now feel confident about shaving. This upgraded trimmer includes a multifunction on-off switch that can engage a travel lock. It also includes the ability to turn the 4000K LED spotlight on and off when you need for a more precise shave. The Lawnmower 4.0 even allows you to customize your trim through additional guard lengths with sizes 1-4. So y'all can get as close as you want or leave it a little bushy if you feel like it. But did I mention the wireless charging? This is the biggest selling point, okay? The wireless charging system uses electromagnetic induction, which can help battery length last longer. If you've been shaving with the same below the waist trimmer on your face, you've been doing it wrong, because that's absolutely disgusting. No person wants to end up with pubes in their mouth. Exactly. It's time to get your own hair and body trimmer with Manscaped to make me time the best time and to enhance your confidence. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code BCP20 at manscaped.com. Manscaped makes grooming easy. That's 20% off at manscaped.com using the code BCP20. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped. Midnight Marauders was released in November of 1993, and what they did here was take the jazz-soaked sound of The Low End Theory and combine that with the more eclectic sampling that we already saw on People's Distinctive Travels. In short, Midnight Marauders was a lot more funkier than The Low End Theory, but the group would still focus on those three key elements. Midnight Marauders saw the group choose not to eliminate those surface noises like they did on the album before. Instead, they opted for all the snaps and crackles to make it sound a lot more grittier. I thoroughly loved and enjoyed the way the album takes a much more melodic approach, specifically on singles Award Tour and Electric Relaxation. Award Tour's bass line was also sampled from the bass line of Jade's 1992 hit, Don't Walk Away, after Q-Tip DJed a party and noticed how much people loved the groove. Fife Dawg really stands out on songs like 8 Million Stories, where he talks about a bunch of mundane annoyances, and even gets a little self-deprecating on the song Oh My God when he calls himself the Funky Diabetic. Midnight Marauders also saw the wordplay between Tip and Fife tighten up immensely, so much so that they seemed way more interconnected than ever before, despite there being a growing rift between the pair due to Q-Tip's controlling nature around the studio. The entirety of the album feels like the back end of a back-to-back championship run. After Midnight Marauders, the group took a break for the next 3 years to tour and do other creative ventures. Fife moved to Atlanta, Tip and Ali continue working on productions for other artists, Ali's shining moment being on D'Angelo's debut album, Brown Sugar. And while on tour, the group's touring keyboardist introduced Tip to a Detroit-born DJ named JD. Q-Tip eventually invited him to join a new production group with him and Ali, and they called it the Ummah, which is Arabic for worldwide, since both Tip and Ali had converted to Islam at the time. If the name JD doesn't ring a bell, that's probably because he would later change his name to J Dilla and become one of the most influential producers in hip-hop history. The group all gathered together to make the album Beats, Rhymes, and Life, which came out in July of 1996. The album had a third of an album's worth of features from rapper Consequence, who was also Q-Tip's cousin. There's nothing wrong with Beats, Rhymes, and Life in particular, but it attempts to meld the world of jazz samples that Tribe created with synths and adds the incredible production from J Dilla. However, it just didn't feel the same. The group just seemed so disconnected from one another, and it seemed as though they just didn't want to be here for this album, part of which Fife Dawg would later express. The addition of Consequence on a good portion of the album, plus Tip being Tip in the studio, made him feel isolated from the group, according to him. He said he just didn't know his place within the group, which could probably explain why his verses felt so phoned in for most of this thing. Standout tracks include the single Once Again, which was a cool R&B crossover, The Jam, which described the first time trying weed before going to a house party where they were conveniently introduced to hip-hop, Mind Power is one of my favorites, as well as it samples NT by Kool & the Gang and looks to go directly against the gangster rap movement that was popular in rap at the time. The oddest song on here is definitely Phony Rappers, which seems to go against the idea that Tribe established about community and Afrocentrism in their earlier albums. Seeing Tribe essentially hate on any rappers that didn't write their rhymes and what felt like a significant punch down wasn't bad, but it just felt so incredibly weird to hear from Tribe. This album isn't bad by any means, but it just felt less exciting than their past works. But it was this album exactly that introduced us to J Dilla in a massive way, so there's no way that this thing could really be bad. The Love Movement is the next album from Tribe, and honestly, it was such an interesting time in their career. Not only was it their last album for 18 years, but even the lead up to its release was wild. The album was initially slated to come out in May of 98, but because of a fire at Q-Tip's home that year, so much was lost. Not any people, though. Q-Tip's home studio was burnt, so were unreleased tracks from Tribe and his own personal vinyl collection from which he would heavily sample from. This caused a pause in production, but it was also a demoralizing blow to the group as well. While they had built their platform on always being themselves, by the time the Love Movement was released, we were entering the shiny suit era of rap. Big budget music videos, chrome everything, and flexing material possessions was the thing. And that wasn't Tribe's thing. This album felt like another continuation of the last, and while Tip and Fife seem a little bit more excited on their verses, it's ultimately still pretty boring for them. I love Give Me, which features Noriega because of all those warped flutes on the production, and Find A Way is also a clear standout that I think most people end up enjoying about this album as well. However, most of the albums just didn't resonate like Tribe had done before. I think the group was honestly just at its breaking point and ready to be done. I think the biggest change for this album was the cover art itself. Gone were the red, green, and black and stick figure logos and body drawings in those colors that the group had become known for. And here we were with just a black and white album. I think this is probably Tribe's weakest album, but again, in no means is it bad, and I think that's the remarkable thing about Tribe. They have no bad albums, they just have albums that were probably less interesting than Midnight Marauders or The Low End Theory. And I think for that reason alone, they deserve all the praise and adoration that they get. Before The Love Movement was even released, though, the group announced that it would be their last. At the time, Q-Tip said that the group was at odds with their record label Jive, but later on, Fife and Jarobi said it was about their stylings just not being as widely accepted as it once was. There was also rumors that the rift between Fife and Tip were just completely at its breaking point and it could no longer be a healthy situation for them to create in. After going their separate ways, each member branched off and created their own music and also worked with a bunch of up-and-coming artists. Fife released one album in 2000, and it was pretty okay. There's a verse dissing Q-Tip, but it only fanned the flames of the tension between them, and there was nothing much after that. After this album, for the most part, Fife kind of stayed out of the public eye and just focused on his health, specifically revolving around his diabetes. Jarobi continued being a chef and became quite notable for that. Ali stayed in the neo-soul lane and formed the R&B supergroup Lucy Pearl with Raphael Sadiq from Tony 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 and Don Robinson from En Vogue and released the self-titled album, which is R&B Gold. He also put out his own album, but you can't find it anywhere except for on YouTube. It's also incredible. You should really check it out, though. Q-Tip went on to produce for some of the most notable rappers of all time and produced three solo albums, all of which were okay, but The Renaissance is hands down the best. In 2006, the group reunited to tour mainly to help Fife pay some medical bills, but what spawned from that reunion was the Michael Rapaport film Beats, Rhymes, and Life, The Travels of a Tribe Called Quest, which was interesting to say the least. It chronicled the story of the group all the way up until their reunion and tour, and the film was scored by the producer Madlib and really showed what the group was like behind the scenes. I can't stand Michael Rapaport, his Woody Harrelson wannabe ass, but the film is still one of my favorite hip-hop docs ever. After the doc, the group continued touring sporadically, including doing some supporting dates for Kanye West on his tour for Yeezus, and at the time of the performances, it was scheduled to be the last time Tribe would be together, but then something great happened. In 2015, to celebrate 25 years since the release of People Instinctive Travels, the group, yes, all four members, performed together on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. Go back and watch the performances because the aura in the air at that show just felt different. It felt like Tribe was back. And that energy was so harmonious and beautiful, it actually ended up sparking them beginning to record a new album, the first one in over 18 years. Ali decided to focus on his upcoming project producing the soundtrack for Netflix's brand new show Luke Cage, leaving Tip, Fife, and goddamn Jarobi White, yes, he returned, to handle the recording for this album. The album was recorded in Tip's home studio in New Jersey, and people who were around during the time of the recording said watching Fife and Tip make music together was like watching a unicorn. So, as the album was being finished, Fife Dog ended up passing away in March of 2016 due to complications from his diabetes. To say that this was untimely would be an understatement, but as a fan of Tribe, I'm at least glad that all the petty beef was squashed before he passed. Tip and Jarobi finished the album and dedicated it to Fife. We Got It From Here, Thank You For Your Service was released in November of 2016, and it's easily their best work since Midnight Marauders in 93. The best part of this album was the emergence of rock music, the subtle hints of guitar, the inspiration that Tip drew from Iggy Pop, and in general how modern this thing felt. In 2016, there were so many Afrocentric albums, Jamila Woods' Heaven, Solange's A Seat at the Table, but to me, no one could have fit this Afrocentric vibe better than the originators, and I think that's why this project was so well received by everyone. The features from Jack White an Elton John sample on Solid Wall of Sound is amazing. But what I love most about the features is that Q-Tip included folks who were directly inspired by Tribe, like Kanye West and Talib Kweli on The Killing Season, or Anderson .Paak on Moving Backwards. It was like an amalgamation of everything Tribe had built with some people that were there with them from the beginning and who got their beginning from listening to them. I loved how Tribe used the 2016 political climate to discuss topics that were on their first run of albums. We Got It From Here is one of the most innovative pieces of art I've heard in a long time, and I think the entire aura of the album is best captured by their own motto, which is to stay low and do their own thing. The group formally disbanded after touring for the album in 2017 and after appearing on the Grammys in that year as well. Jarobi went back to being a chef. Ali is still producing music in the R&B world. Q-Tip as well is still producing music. And something that a lot of people didn't know was that he was trying to get Megan Thee Stallion signed for years. It recently came up on Twitter that Q-Tip was a big part of her early years, and a lot of people kind of ignored him when he tried to tell people that Megan Thee Stallion was going to be the next superstar. I'm not sure who it was that directly ignored Q-Tip's suggestion to sign Megan Thee Stallion, but whoever that is, I'm sure they are completely punching air right now. If you want to get into Tribe, I would recommend starting with The Low End Theory and Midnight Marauders, then People's Instinctive Travels, followed by We Got It From Here, and rounding it out with Beats, Rhymes, and Life and The Love Movement. Tribe will always hold a special place in my heart, as they were one of my first introductions into jazz rap and have always captured my vibe perfectly. I care about my world and my community, but I love to keep it positive and fun as well. Tribe has inspired a long list of producers, MCs, and tastemakers alike, and it's obvious once you sit and listen to their body of work. I'm happy that they were able to end their story on a positive and eloquent note, as that is exactly what this group deserved. Their impact cannot be understated, especially as we just hit 30 years of The Low End Theory being out. Tribe will always go down as one of the most interesting, innovative groups of all time in music, and we'll be talking about them in 50 years as the cycle of music will surely circle back to the sound they crafted in the early 90s. Thank you guys so much for joining me for another episode of the Back Catalog Podcast, where we deep dived into A Tribe Called Quest. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please go check out Tribe. They are one of my favorites, one of the greatest groups to ever exist. They mean so much to me, and I'm so happy I got to do this episode. Make sure you follow me on Instagram at Pablo.thedon. Make sure you follow the Back Catalog Podcast on Instagram, Back Catalog Pod. That's catalog spelled the American way, C-A-T-A-L-O-G. Follow me on TikTok, Pablo the Don, all one word. And follow me on Twitter at Pablo the Don with two E's. Thank you again for joining us. Make sure you check out the Spotify and Apple Music links for the playlist in regards to this episode. And if you feel like it, support me on Patreon as well. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the Back Catalog Podcast. I'm Pablo the Don, and I'll see you guys soon.
Okay, so guitar. Okay, so let's start with this. What's your name?
Q-Tip.
Where are you going? Who are you going with?
Left my wallet in El Segundo. Left my wallet in El Segundo. Left my wallet in El Segundo. I gotta get it. I got to get it. I left my wallet in El Segundo. Left my wallet in El Segundo.